Like the office they commemorate, presidential libraries are living institutions. Certainly, it is my hope that the Reagan Library will become a dynamic intellectual forum where scholars interpret the past and policymakers debate the future.
Welcome to a Reagan Forum, hosted by the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute. The Center for Public Affairs offers lectures and forums presenting perspectives on important public policy issues of the day, from politicians, authors, members of the media, business and military leaders, and more. This week's Reagan Forum podcast will be a little different, as we will spend it by honoring the expansion of the Reagan Library Peace Through Strength Pavilion.
Strong national defense for the United States is not only indispensable to arms control, but for the security, freedom, and peace of the entire world. A real and secure peace depends on us, on our courage to build it and guard it and pass it on to future generations. George Washington's words ring just as true today. To be prepared for war, he said, is one of the most effective means of preserving the peace. American strength is a sheltering arm for peace and freedom in an often dangerous world. And strength is the most persuasive argument we have to convince our adversaries to give up their hostile intentions, to negotiate seriously, and to stop bullying other nations. In the real world, peace through strength must be our motto.
Ronald Reagan entered the White House determined to restore the strength of the U.S. military. He insisted on military might not for its own sake, but to discourage threats to American interests, defend freedom around the world, and to help bring the Soviet Union to the bargaining table. As he said in 1982, "When I took office in January 1981, I was appalled by what I found. American planes that couldn't fly, American ships that couldn't sail, and insufficient fuel and ammunition for essential training." So President Reagan began his Peace Through Strength initiatives, rebuilding our national defenses and the importance of a strong military. In 1980, fewer than half of Navy ships were ready for duty, and only 6 in 10 Air Force units were ready for action. But by 1988, nearly all Navy ships and over 90% of Air Force units were combat ready. Speaking of Air Force units, in December of 2019, the Ronald Reagan Library added an F-117 Nighthawk, tail number 803, and nicknamed Unexpected Guest, to its campus. The aircraft entered service in May of 1984, during President Reagan's administration, and flew more combat sorties than all other F-117s combined. The F-117 Nighthawk was the world's first operational stealth aircraft. Between 1981 and 2008, Lockheed Martin produced 59 operational F-117s. But the aircraft wasn't publicly acknowledged until 1988. Known as stealth fighters, the F-117's angular shape was designed to reflect radar waves and was bolstered by the use of a radar-absorbing material. Because the aircraft was only to fly at night, it was painted black to make it more difficult to discern against the night sky. Let's now go back to December 7th, 2019, for our ribbon-cutting ceremony with the Secretary of the Air Force and the Chief of Staff of the Air Force.
Welcome, everyone. Thank you for joining us during this brief pause in the rain. This, I have to say, is a proud occasion for the Reagan Presidential Library. We're privileged to welcome this F-117 Nighthawk to its new home, where it will serve as a cornerstone of our growing Peace Through Strength exhibit. We're presenting the plane here in a place of honor at the Reagan Library because it has a special place in the Reagan legacy. This revolutionary aircraft was part of the historic overhaul of United States military that began in President Reagan's first term. The weapons and platforms developed through that effort allowed the United States to emerge victorious in the Cold War, as Prime Minister Thatcher famously said, without firing a shot. Though long shrouded in secrecy, the F-117 was part of a show of strength that helped secure the peace. In that sense, the most remarkable part of its story may be the bombs that it never dropped. Looking at this plane, it is a triumph of aerospace design. And I'm no engineer, but I think the technical term is badass. In the coming years, this exhibit will educate millions of people who visit the Reagan Library. Guests from around the world will be introduced to the world's first stealth combat aircraft and the power of American innovation. We're pleased to be joined today by two people who know this plane and its power better than anyone. Lieutenant Colonel Scott Stempert, also known as Bandit 270. Scott piloted this F-17 for several years, and Rick Wright, succeeded him as pilot. We're delighted to have them both here, and we thank them for their skill to assuring that it arrived here at the Reagan Library in one piece. This will always be your plane, but we assure you that we will take good care of it. The exhibit would not be possible without the support of the National Museum of the United States Air Force. On behalf of the Reagan Library, I'd like to extend our appreciation to the Secretary of the Air Force, Barbara Barrett, and invite her to say a few words.
Thanks so very much. Thank you very much. This really is a special occasion. It's fitting that we gather here at the Reagan Presidential Library, this metaphoric city on the hill, to unveil the F-117 Nighthawk, a visible reminder of President Reagan's mantra of peace through strength. President Ronald Reagan inspired America and America's friends worldwide. His outsized impact on America's national defense could be traced to his unflinching advocacy of the military. In his 8 years as Commander-in-Chief, the defense budget increased by 192%. He used these resources to fund programs like this formidable weapon. The F-117 Nighthawk is the epitome of innovation and successful collaboration between the United States Air Force and industry. In April 1976, the Air Force awarded Lockheed Martin a contract for the F-117's prototype called Have Blue. 31 short months later, this marvel was airborne. One of the Nighthawk's greatest moments was during Desert Storm. It was estimated that we would lose 5% of the F-117s launched during the first night. But thanks to stealth technology and extraordinary pilots, every aircraft came home safely. But only after having destroyed 49 Iraqi defense targets. That paved the way for the liberation of Kuwait. The arrival of the F-117 changed the calculus of war. Here's one measure. Planners stopped thinking about how many aircraft it took to destroy a target and began asking how many targets an aircraft could destroy. As you may know, General Dave Goldfein was among the last to become fully qualified to fly the F-117. He also commanded the only wing in the Air Force to pilot this astounding aircraft in combat. As a young commander in F-16 squadron, he led his airmen into combat. His unit was known as the world's largest distributor of MiG parts. As a slightly older wing commander, he was ready to do it again in his 117. Dave was given the arduous job of transitioning the 49th Fighter Wing from the F-117 to the F-22, at the time one of the most challenging tasks around for a wing commander. Ladies and gentlemen, you're in for a treat. You're about to hear from a true American hero and an incomparable leader, my wingman and the chief of staff of the world's greatest Air Force, General David Goldfein.
Thanks, Madam Secretary. You know, our airmen have no better friend than their new secretary, and it's an honor to share the stage with you. So you know you're getting old when they start putting planes you actually flew on a pedestal. So we heard that every pilot that ever flew the F-117 was given a bandit number. And the first pilot was Major Al Whitley, and he was bandit 150. You see, we started with number 150 because we didn't want to give away to the enemy how many pilots were actually in the program. And only 558 pilots ever flew the F-117 operationally, and two we've talked about are here today, Bandits 270 and 352. And as Secretary Barrett said, I was privileged to be the last bandit, number 708. And I will tell you the most fascinating part of flying the Black Jet, which is what we called her, was the opportunity to meet and spend time with the community of folks from Skunk Works and across the government who worked for years shrouded in secrecy to create the game-changing technology called stealth. I believe it stands today as the greatest secret our nation has ever kept. Think about this. For 9 years, pilots, maintainers, contractors, support personnel would gather at a small airport in North Las Vegas. And every Sunday afternoon, they'd quietly fly north to Tonopah Airfield. And for a week, they would live like bats, sleeping during the day and flying all night, only to return home to their families on Friday night. Rinse, wash, repeat for 9 years. The entire time, families had no idea what mom or dad did or where they were. Cover stories became the norm, and they held. And everyone was issued tie pins, like these gentlemen are wearing, with the Nighthawk symbol. The eye of the bird was red for pilots and gray for all others. And so the ROE was, if they saw each other on weekends in Vegas, they would acknowledge with a slight head nod and then quickly separate, so nobody could put two and two together or possibly say something that might compromise the story. It's the only top secret program I know of that had another top secret program as its cover. Because as now we know, we had Soviet MiGs in our inventory that we were also flying in North Las Vegas. And if you see Hawk Carlisle, ask him about jumping out of one of those airplanes. It's a hell of a story. So most of us thought the secret would last maybe 2-3 years tops. Who knew it would maintain its Manhattan Project level of secrecy for almost a decade? The greatest secret we've ever kept. But I also tell you, I found inspiration in how the Black Jet came to be and what it means to all of us today as we continue to bring game-changing technology to the battlefield. You see, the story starts 30 miles away in Burbank. Dennis Oberholzer, a young Skunkworks engineer, so his idea of a good time on weekends was reading journals, technical journals, translated from other languages. So he's reading this Russian journal, and he finds a math equation for what we now call stealth. And he walks into Ben Rich, the CEO at Skunkworks, and he puts a model, a wooden carving that he'd carved in his shed, of what resembles a Hope diamond. And Ben looks up and he says, well, what's that? He says, well, this will return the radar cross-section of an eagle's eye. And Ben responded, well, you mean an eagle? He said, no, an eagle's eye. And then, as captured in the famous book, Skunkworks, Ben looked at him and said, well, can you get it airborne? And Ben said, how hard could it be? So they started working on it. And then Ben Rich came to the Pentagon, and he spoke to the Chief of Staff of the Air Force and the Secretary of Defense, and he pulled a marble out of his jacket pocket, and he rolled it across the table towards the Secretary. And the Secretary asked him, what's that? And Ben Rich said, it's the radar cross-section of what I'm about to build you. And the rest is history. If it wasn't for the intellectual curiosity of Dennis Oberholzer, or the determination of Ben Rich, or the willingness of a Secretary of Defense and a Chief of Staff to make a bet, our nation might not have had the critical capabilities that served us for so many years. So what an honor to be here to share this moment as we establish this remarkable aircraft, the first operational stealth fighter in its rightful place here at the President Reagan's library. Because the F-117 story is one for all of us to remember. Because just as they did, we got to be prepared to work side by side with industry to take chances and place bets on the technology that ensures that we win. What a fitting tribute to audacity, vision, and pure guts that should inspire everyone who walks by here and sees this for years to come. And for all of us, let the marbles roll. It's now my honor to introduce the current CEO of Skunkworks, Jeff Babione.
General Goldfein, thank you. Secretary Barrett, thank you for joining us today. It's such a great honor to be here, and there's no better place than the Reagan Library to share the phrase made popular by President Reagan himself, and we display proudly at our largest facility at Lockheed Martin, peace through strength, lots of strength. The F-117 represents the strength of American innovation, the strength of the U.S. Air Force, and the strength of what we can achieve when we work together. I speak for the entire Lockheed Martin team when I tell you the pride we have for this aircraft, from development to first flight in just 31 months, a feat made possible by a unique partnership with our U.S. government. It's the world's first operational stealth aircraft, developed in complete secrecy by the Skunk Works. So good was its radar cross-section that it was referred to as the black hole in the sky. The aircraft was nearly impossible to detect. In fact, it has laid the foundation for the fifth-generation stealth technology that we now use on the F-35. As soon as we learned the U.S. Air Force's plan to put the aircraft on permanent loan here at the library, we knew we had to be involved. The Skunk Works team completed the restoration in just a little over 100 days. An unforgettable effort, because we see the F-117 as revolutionary. A secret program worked quickly and quietly. An excellent example of our country's drive to innovate. Our mission is yours, and we will never stop developing breakthrough technologies. As a permanent display here at the Reagan Library, the 117 will help educate a new generation of Americans, inspiring young people to become engineers, mathematicians, and scientists. Our enduring partnership brought about the F-117 Nighthawk, as well as many other transformational aircraft. And together, they have enabled U.S. air power to shape the world. I simply want to end by saying thank you to the Lockheed Martin team who restored this aircraft, and to our team around the world, and to our service members and veterans. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jeff, and to the team at Lockheed Martin Skunk Works. General, Madam Secretary, how about we cut the ribbon?
More from our Reagan Forum podcast after this message.
The Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation is the nonprofit organization created by President Reagan himself and specifically charged by him with continuing his legacy and sharing his principles, individual liberty, economic opportunity, global democracy, and national pride. We must remain vigilant and work together to share these conservative principles with younger generations. Your role is critical to move our mission forward. Thank you for your continued support. Please visit reaganfoundation.org/give. That's reaganfoundation.org/give.
Now back to a Reagan Forum podcast. In addition to adding the F-117 stealth fighter jet to our Peace Pavilion, just this past month we dedicated our new M1 Abrams main battle tank, which was designed in the 1970s and issued to the U.S. Army for use in February 1980. In fact, while speaking to the Congress in 1982 about the importance of military buildup to protect our peace, President Reagan encouraged rapid production of the M1 Abrams tank. The tank is named after United States Army General Creighton William Abrams, Jr., who commanded military operations in Vietnam and served as Chief of Staff of the Army from 1972 until his death in 1974. The M1 Abrams tank was designed by Chrysler Defense, which is now General Dynamics. It was designed as a highly mobile main battle tank for modern armored ground warfare. Weighing in at 62 metric tons, it's one of the heaviest main battle tanks in service. Let's now listen to our tank dedication ceremony from December 4th, 2021.
Welcome, everyone. My name is John Heibusch, and I have the honor of being the executive director of the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute. Let me start by saying that I have had a lot of memorable experiences in my time here, but it is not every day, as you can imagine, that we get to cut the ribbon for an M1 Abrams tank. Truth be told, I thought I was going to be allowed to fire it once or twice, but I see that it's not in my remarks, so it must have been vetoed by a neighbor that way. But seriously, I know that all of you are aware that President Reagan's defense policies could be summed up in a single phrase: peace through strength. Well, to Ronald Reagan, this is what peace through strength looked like. Among such defense experts that are here, I do not have to tell you that it was tanks just like this, and just like the F-117 stealth fighter and the F-14 up on this hill, that were part of the strategic military buildup that defined Ronald Reagan's presidency and helped to win the Cold War. The M1 Abrams tanks that rolled off the line alongside this one conducted military exercises in Eastern Europe and then were tested in combat during Operation Desert Storm, as well as the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. Tanks like this were manufactured in Ohio and Michigan by General Dynamics, a testament to the ingenuity of American manufacturing, and a reminder of why a strong industrial base is not just an economic, but a national security imperative. We are so grateful to the United States Army, and in particular to Audrey Clark of the Army Donation Office and General Dynamics for donating this tank to the Reagan Library as part of our Evolving Peace Through Strength exhibit. I'd also like to recognize the commanding general of Fort Irwin, Brigadier General Taylor, who is with us today. For those not from this area, Fort Irwin, our local Army base, is located just a few hours away. They were so kind to adopt our Abrams tank. They came out just a few weeks ago and painted all of the emblems that you see on the sides of the tank. The six outstanding soldiers who you see behind me are from Fort Irwin and are helping us in today's program. Now, I'd like to turn it over to Danny Deep, President of General Dynamics Land Systems. Danny?
Well, thank you very much, Madam Secretary, Chief, all of the honored guests. Can't tell you what a thrill it is to be here representing General Dynamics for this dedication ceremony. The 1972, about 50 years ago, Armor Magazine, the lead article was The Death of the Tank. The author that wrote the article clearly got it wrong. We hadn't even designed the Abrams tank. Anybody who has used this piece of equipment understands the decisiveness, capability that it brings, and recognizes that it's an unfair fight when you come to it with the tank. I can tell you that this version is an earlier version and is a representation of courageous leaders and brilliant men and women who came up with a concept that even today continues to be modernized. Eight generations later, the Abrams main battle tank is the most dominant capability on the ground, on the earth. So on behalf of General Dynamics, I want to thank all of you. We're happy to be part of this. Thank you for your dedication and your leadership in the defense of our nation. Thank you.
Thanks, Danny, and General Dynamics for your generosity. I now like to invite on the stage General James McConville, Chief of Staff of the United States Army, to say a few words. General?
Well, thank you, and very honored to be here. You know, on May 27th, 1981, President Reagan spoke at our West Point graduation. He talked about peace through strength. And part of that peace through strength was making sure that our soldiers had what they needed to do their job. And it was the Big Five. And part of the Big Five was the Abrams tank. And having seen this tank fight in many, many operations, we are very, very blessed to have it, and we're very honored to have it displayed here with the as a part of the joint force. But one thing that we always remember in the Army, it's great that we have great equipment, but it's really about the soldiers. And it's the soldiers that we equip with. So I have 30 seconds left, and what I want to do is take PFC Chin, come on up here. Come on over here. I want you to stand right there. This is a great soldier. And one of the things I have is the Chief of Staff of the Army, I can promote people on the spot. So I'm going to make him a specialist in the United States Army, because he's what it's all about. You know? About the soldier.
I'd now like to introduce the Secretary of the Army, Secretary Warmoth, who was just so kind to take time out of her busy day to be with us as well. Secretary.
Good morning, everybody. It's great to be with all of you and our friends from the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and General Dynamics. I will be very brief because, frankly, it's hard to top promoting a great soldier, which is fantastic. But I will say, you know, the tank behind us represents a lot of history, and it's a powerful symbol of American might. Ronald Reagan, you know, was the president, as General McConville said, when the Abrams was first fielded. And just as President Reagan, I think, projected the confidence of the American people when he represented us around the world, tankers past and present in our Army have always had tremendous confidence in the Abrams. It got rave reviews when it was fielded in the early 80s. It's perhaps our fiercest armored vehicle. It's seen combat in places like Kuwait in the first Gulf War, and then later in Iraq in Operation Iraqi Freedom. It's been upgraded many, many times, as Mr. Deep indicated. It's actually now, the latest version is the M1A2 Abrams SEP V3, which is a mouthful. But, you know, as we in the Army are undertaking our most ambitious modernization effort in the last 40 years, we are focused on fielding a lot of new systems, a lot of next generation capabilities. We also have what General McConville and I call enduring capabilities in our arsenal, if you will. And the Abrams behind me very much represents that kind of enduring capability. And I think the testament to its continuing utility all these decades later is how many of our allies and partners around the world want to get Abrams into their armies. I was actually just in Poland meeting with the Minister of Defense, talking with them about their interest in purchasing Abrams for their army. So I can't predict where the next conflict will be, but I have no doubt that this iconic warfighting vehicle will be in the thick of the fight whenever that conflict comes.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. I want to now recognize Representative Mike Rogers, ranking member of the House Armed Services Committee, for a few words. Congressman?
I'm very pleased to be here and seeing this donation and this recognition of this important platform, which is born in the district of one of my new Armed Services colleagues, Lisa McLean, of Michigan. But all those upgrades that the Secretary just talked about happened in my hometown and the Anniston Army Depot, and this platform for four decades has been an enduring platform in keeping our nation safe and secure, and it will continue to do so. So it's great that it's being honored here, and I appreciate you let me be a part of it.
Thanks so much, Congressman. And now we are proud to formally dedicate this M1 Abrams tank as the latest addition to the Peace Through Strength exhibit here at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library.
You can see the F-117 stealth fighter jet and our Abrams M1 tank alongside our F-14 fighter jet when you visit us here at the Reagan Library. For more information, visit ReaganLibrary.com. For more information on the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute, including information on how to become a member, information on upcoming exhibits at the Reagan Library, and more information on the legacy of President Reagan, please visit ReaganFoundation.org. And don't forget to like and follow the Reagan Foundation on all social media platforms.
Until next week, thanks for listening. God bless you.
Don't forget to subscribe to A Reagan Forum podcast in your iTunes or Google Play stores and on other podcast platforms as they become available. New episodes of A Reagan Forum come out every Thursday. Like what you hear? Check out our Words to Live By podcast featuring radio addresses and speeches Ronald Reagan delivered from the 1960s through the 1980s. New episodes drop every Tuesday. And don't forget to follow at Ronald Reagan on Facebook, at Ronald Reagan on Twitter, and Reagan Foundation on YouTube. Also, search for us on SoundCloud and Stitcher.